Good evening, and welcome to our program, brought to you by the Commonwealth Club of Silicon Valley and Deloitte. My name is Kirsten Rhodes, and I'm Managing Director for our inclusion efforts in the West Region, and we are incredibly proud to sponsor tonight's event, Empowering Women Leaders Through Personal Sponsorship. It's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished panel. Mark Edmonds is Vice Chairman and Regional Managing Partner for Deloitte's West Region. He's been with the firm for over 30 years, working with Fortune 500 companies in the energy, utilities, and technology industries. Mark is on the board of the Bay Area Council, the Asia Society, is a National Advisory Board member for the Positive Coaching Alliance, and Executive Committee Board member for the Larkin Street Youth Services. Randy Pond is the Executive Vice President of Operations, Processes, and Systems for Cisco Systems. He's been with the company for 20 years, and prior to that, he was with Crescendo Communications, Versatex, Xerox, and Arthur Anderson. He chairs the board of the March of Dimes of Silicon Valley and serves on boards of CARE USA and the Islamic Networks Group. Janice Roberts is an entrepreneur and venture advisor at the Mayfield Fund. She was also president of 3Com Ventures and held various executive positions at 3Com Corporation. Janice serves on several boards and is an advisor to Illuminate Ventures, which primarily invests in companies that are inclusive of women entrepreneurs. She also teaches entrepreneurship and venture capital at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Kay Foster Cheek is the Senior Vice President of Global Human Resources at Onyx Pharmaceuticals. Prior to joining Onyx, Kay held executive positions at Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer. She has also been honored as Woman of the Year by the Corporate Women's Network, and she serves on the board for Girls for a Change. Our moderator this evening is Shelley Carell. Dr. Carell is director of the Clayman Institute for Gender Research at Stanford. Prior to joining Stanford, Dr. Carell has taught at Cornell University and the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinguished honor to welcome this panel, Mark Edmonds, Randy Pond, Kay Foster Cheek, Janice Roberts, and Dr. Shelley Carell.
So welcome, everyone. I'm personally delighted to be here. This topic of sponsorship is something that I think is just really important if we're thinking about how to advance women into leadership roles. Gender scholars at this point in time really describe the era that we're living in as the stalled gender revolution, a phrase that refers to the fact that after sort of rapid progress on the road to equality in the 70s and 80s, since we've hit about the 1990s, things have plateaued or flattened out. Not getting worse, but we're not getting a lot better. And so I think one of the big tasks for us is to think about what we can do to start moving women more from the pipeline, which we're filling up quite nicely, into leadership positions. And to me, sponsorship is a real key lever for doing that. So I'm really very excited to have this panel here today and to hear what people have to say about their experiences, both being sponsored and also being a sponsor of others. So I thought what we would do is just start off with a little bit of a definitional issue, that is to differentiate between the term sponsor with something I think we're probably more familiar with, the term mentor. So I'd like to ask each of the panelists, you know, in your own words, what does being a sponsor mean? And you might contrast that to being a mentor.
Thank you, Shelley. I'm happy to be here, and this is a very important topic to corporate America. And I'm proud that I've been sponsored and mentored myself, and I hope that I've paid that forward over my three-decade career. Mentorship to me is really spending time with someone to share your wisdom, share your thoughts, to help them perform at a higher level. But sponsorship is really about this. Every day in organizations around a table, there are decisions being made on key appointments. In our business, it's serving the best clients, getting in the best leadership positions. And when those decisions are being made, if there's a lot of men around the table that have a lot of influence to pick that man, there has to be someone in that room that slams their hand on the table and says, not this time. This high talent woman is going to take this role. She's ready for it. And you use your political capital, the trust you've built up over time, to put your hand on the table, not this time. Promote that woman.
Thank you.
You know, I think for us, when we talk about the difference at Cisco, it's really around making the emotional connection with the sponsored individual. I mean, you can mentor someone and never really make a connection, but when you sponsor someone, then you co-own them in the enterprise. And early in my career, I had a young, high potential female who had had four or five jobs in a manufacturing organization, which I was working at the time, and she wanted to move across the business. And she wanted to go to finance, but she had never worked in accounting or finance in her life. And to make it work, I had to give them a right to return. So I sponsored her into a financial role. She became my controller, so she learned the job underneath me. And then I said, if she fails, I will just happily take her back into the business. So I'm committed to making her successful in the role. And since I came out of a financial background, it was easy for me to do. I think that's been the big missing link at Cisco. We've automated the devil out of mentorship, but we haven't trained into the leadership team. How do you really step up to sponsorship in the enterprise, which I think is an emotional connection that we just aren't there yet.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would add is it really is about advocacy. It goes beyond just the willingness to network and to support someone. It really speaks to, in those critical moments, using the particular power, opportunity, knowledge that you as an individual have in the organization to advocate for someone. And that advocacy is all about also using your political capital to be able to support someone. And it isn't just about supporting them into the role. It is continuing to own their success and to have that joint ownership of that success. Underneath all of that, I think the emotional connection that you're talking about is because it's a trust-based relationship. That individual trusts you. You have to trust that individual, and that trust is built over time. So unlike mentoring, which I think has its appropriate uses, tends to be more transitory, tends to be more connected to networking, advocacy and sponsorship is really about a longer-term, deeper connection and a willingness to a certain extent, put your political capital on the line for someone else and to advocate for that individual.
I would agree with everything that's been said, and I would particularly agree with you, Kay, and certainly from my own personal experience. I would say early in my career, which was in the UK and not here, I was proactively sponsored, actually. And you know, I think in my early 30s, I was given the opportunity to run a business that was spun out of a large technology company in the UK, and that business I brought to the US and then ultimately sold that business to 3Com and became part of the networking world that Rand is part of. But, you know, the people that put me in that job took a really big risk because I'd come up through the marketing function and had some business development experience and so on. But to give me the job, it was a technology company, a networking company, but to give me that job, those people really put a lot of their own political capital out there for me, but they also followed through. Now, I did make some mistakes, and they helped me through those mistakes. I did want to bring the company to the US. They helped me do that. I did want to fully spin it out, and they saw the opportunities to do that, and they made money from it in the end. But that follow-through was so important. And, you know, I honestly really probably didn't know what I was doing when I took the job, honestly. I was really short of what you would expect if you put a specification together, but they obviously saw that I would find a way, but they helped me find that way. And that, to me, was true sponsorship.
Janice, I love the story that you've told about your own sponsorship, and I wonder if the rest of you would like to share a way that you personally have been sponsored and what that has meant to you and to your career.
It's interesting. In 1993, the CEO of Deloitte woke up and realized his daughter was not going to have the same opportunities that his sons were going to have. And that's when the Women's Initiative at Deloitte was started in 1993. And he was someone that I followed very closely and was looking for sponsorship, mm-hmm. looking for someone. And actually, it's very ironic, but my most important sponsor in the firm over 34 years is a woman, very talented woman of the East Coast. And I always say that she was not just one of the greatest female leaders in Deloitte, but is one of the greatest leaders in Deloitte. And she helped me become a more powerful leader and was with me for 3 or 4 years, actually in the last 10 years, 3 or 4 years of sponsoring my growth in the firm. I owe a lot of my success to her. Maritza Montiel is her name.
Ready?
Well, I think clearly my biggest sponsorship has been while I was at Cisco. It's been over half of my career, and I was the CFO and the VP of Ops at a little startup company that we sold to Cisco in 93, and I did the deal. And it was an awkward deal because John Chambers wanted to buy us. My board didn't want to sell. His board didn't really want to buy.
It was a good deal,
Randy. It was a very good deal. They only paid $95 million for us. It's a several billion-dollar business today, like $20 billion business today. But out of that, you know, John and I sort of forged a friendship. He was the VP of sales at the time. And when I came into the business, he really took me under his wing and sort of helped me chart a career path. I chose my first job, quite frankly. And then over the years, John has given me many, many opportunities to take on more work inside of the enterprise. And he's been by far my biggest sponsor over the 20 years.
I, like many of the other panel members, have had the opportunity over a 35-year career to have had a number of different mentors. And very early on in my career, fresh out of graduate school, I worked for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals at the time. And the person who was the head of human resources at the time for the corporation, I got to know him because I worked. My first job was working in a manufacturing plant that was going through. This was the age of total quality management and self-directed work teams. And I got to know him, and he said to me one day, he said, when this gig out here in the plant is up, what would you like to do? And I said, well, you know, I have not had any global experience, so it's something I would really be interested in doing. And 2 weeks later, I was sitting in his office with the offer for a global role. And very early in my career, with no prior experience, and it was such a defining moment for me because he took a chance on me. There were plenty of other people who you could argue were probably as well qualified or more qualified than I was to do that role in terms of the sets of experiences that they had. But he took that chance on me, and it wasn't just when it first really hit me, the magnitude of what he had done. I was in Vietnam, and this was 20 years ago, as an African-American woman, and I had come off of the plane. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and a group of Vietnamese local people just surged. And just were, and it hit me. It kind of hit me. I'm not in Kansas anymore. And the point was, he had asked me to go over and start up an organization, to build the organization in Vietnam. And there were many days, as you said, when there were mistakes I made, and it was out of ignorance, not malevolence. I just didn't know because I hadn't had that experience before. But it's such seminal moments in my career have been things like that, where people like that have taken a chance on you. And it's something that, because it was so critical to my own development, it's something that I do and have done every single opportunity that I get to do that. Because I think if you are individuals who have any influence, any opportunity, and you don't use that, then you're squandering, quite frankly, the opportunity that's given you. Because I have a belief that to whom much is given, much is required. Not expected, much is required.
I think that's a very good point, because you're seeing a trend here, because it isn't about malevolence and so on. If you're a sponsor and you give someone a shot, I think, like you and I, we feel we want to step up for that person, like you for John Chambers. And you get so much out of it because we really want to make it work. We know someone has given us a chance, and we're going to really work to do that. And then, you know, give back as well. But, you know, it is a two-way thing. It very much is a two-way relationship.
So that really kind of leads to the next thing I hope we could talk about, which is the relationship between the sponsor and the protege, if we want to refer to it that way. So I wonder if you could give some advice to people in the audience about how you would go about finding a sponsor and who that person might be, and then what you if you're being sponsored, what you need to do to really protect that relationship, because you've all talked about somebody sort of putting their neck out there. It's a risky sort of relationship. So what advice would you have about finding a sponsor and ensuring that relationship works well?
Yeah, I've had all kinds of different experiences, and some are, you know, sometimes a path from mentoring and having dialogue and coaching into sponsorship. First of all, be really good. Be really good at what you do. Work hard. As I grew up in the system, I worked really hard, and the people that I work with, I said, my job is to make you fantastic. So I work really hard to make them great. So that you're looking for a sponsor that sees that you're very talented and wants to get engaged with you. And I think we talked about it being a deep and trusting relationship, a two-way relationship. But I think it's hard to say to a company, I want 100 of you to go sponsor all these people. It's a real personal thing. It's hard to programmatically do that. It just kind of naturally happens. And what I've tried to evangelize in my company is you do it because you want to pay it forward because we've all been sponsored, but you do it because it's a smart business thing to do. Yeah, if you have diverse teams, I've noticed all the teams that I've led over my career, if you have diverse teams, I have a lot of women on my team, men and women of color, people from all over the world, we make greater decisions. And so if I can, the more old white guy partners I can convince of that, the better off we're going to be as an organization. We can be an exceptional organization if we follow that path.
Randy?
Well, you know, I think if I think back at the sponsorship relationship I either had myself or with someone in the organization, it is based on a longer term business relationship where I can see the outcomes of the work or they can see the outcomes of my work. So there is some guarantee of a level of expected success in the current role that gives you sort of the courage to step forward and say, I'm willing to take a risk with you in sort of the next role. Like my earlier example with the woman who had never worked in finance but wanted the shot. She's still in the business. She's going to become an SVP. We hired her as an individual contributor 13 years ago. So she was worth the investment. But it's really got to be predicated, I think, on that experience of getting the results out of the individual. And then there's got to be a level of trust. And I think it's a big leap from mentor to sponsor. And I think you've got to be thoughtful about asking for that commitment and making sure that your relationship with the person you're asking is sound enough that you don't put them in an awkward position of offering something they can't deliver on, because I think that is the worst possible environment to put yourself in. But again, if you can nurture it and set an expectation, I think early, the more bold sponsorships that I've had have come in and said, okay, listen, I eventually want you to promote my career in the business. What is it going to take to get there? I'd much rather have that dialogue than dance around it endlessly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And interestingly enough, because in preparation for this, I was just reflecting on the past 35 years that I've been doing this work. And I would say probably for the first two decades, a lot of the support, mentoring, sponsorship that I got was through white males, and that was just the order. That was just because there were the individuals who happened to be in positions of power. So one of the things that I do right now consciously, but I also urge women to do, because increasingly, as you said, there are more and more women in the pipeline. Mm-hmm. So how do you, as a woman, think about the accountability and the responsibility for sponsoring other women? Because I think we are starting to turn that corner where it truly is more diverse. When I think about the leadership team that I'm a part of, it is probably one of the most diverse teams I've ever been a part of. And, you know, our CEO says that all the time. And he didn't go out in search of a diverse team. He went out in search of the best talent that he could find anywhere. It just happened to, a lot of it happens to reside in women. So that speaks to his, speaks to how smart he is. But I think to your point, it is the willingness to lean forward and to take that chance for others, because many of us have benefited from the fact that others have taken a risk on us. And if you just sit and don't feel that same sense of accountability that others have felt towards helping you, then I think you've squandered, as I said before, I think you've squandered that opportunity.
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, Mark, I would say that as women, we hope that we can keep up the diversity and keep a few of you older white men around.
Agreed.
Agreed. Keep the mix.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
Seriously, the accountability piece is really important. What I find as a sponsor, what is really helpful is, well, first of all, be good at something, to your point. You know, I think that anybody who is entering the workforce, it pays to have some domain expertise or to be good at something, and that's what you become known for, and you leverage that as you go forward. But to have some sense of what you want to do, and that path may take a few turns. But if you have a sense of where you want to go, and you will also be accommodating and understand that you might have to do, take a couple of other sidesteps along the way, whether it's going to Vietnam or whatever on your path. You know, I think those things are really important. But have a sense of what you might want to do. Think that through. That's really important, because often, you know, you talk to people and they don't really know, or they're a little coy. And I'm not really a fan of coyness. You know, I'd rather you got it out there, and then we can talk.
So I now want to turn to the two men on the panel, and you've already alluded to this to some, but how did you get involved in this topic? I mean, we're here talking about women and sponsorship. What's the basis of your interest, and what's your history with that?
Well, I've been with Deloitte for a long time, and I think we're a great organization, but I actually want us to be an exceptional organization. And I think we cannot be exceptional unless you look into the face of, you know, in 1993, we had 100 women leaders in our firm. Today, we have 1,100. So we've made enormous progress based on what Mike Cook did, the CEO, in 1993. But we're not there yet. And so for us to be exceptional, we have to have exceptional leadership at all levels. I'm very proud that 12 years ago, I was on the nominating committee that put the first woman chairman on one of the big four firms. So Sharon Allen became the first female chairman of any of the firms. And I'm very proud that in 2006, when I took this seat, I put the first woman leader of the Silicon Valley office in 2006. I think men have to do that. It's up to the men that are sitting these big numbers in the C-suite to actually take action. And it's hard. It's easy to kind of sit back and say, no, maybe not this time. No, it is this time. So I think the men have to take action to really make your organization exceptional. So that's what I seek.
Ready?
Well, so I've had HR reporting to me a couple of times at Cisco, and I've been the leader. I've also been the executive sponsor for the Inclusion and Diversity Organization, and I started the Executive Investment Committee, where we actually look at the pipeline of talent in the business. And as part of that work, diversity clearly became one of the subjects. And we've, you know, we quite frankly struggle, like most tech companies struggle, with diversity in the workplace, specifically in engineering and in sales, where an engineering background is pretty much mandatory. So we're still, I would say we've made progress. There's a lot more female executives in the business today, but it's not where we want it to be. And I've been the executive. Now John went to the Sheryl Sandberg event. Now John's got the religion. now we're banging the drum again. I think the book, you know, her book, although it's gotten a lot of criticism from other females, is actually creating the dialogue again in the enterprise, and it's starting the rallying cry again. I mean, John sent a note out over the weekend after he met that Friday and said, hey, we're restarting this thing. We've talked about this till we're blue. We're not moving the numbers fast enough. And I think, you know, that's the role, you know, of the one or two guys in the organization, just to remind them as we're looking at the populations that, you know, diversity's got to be put on the table.
So now I'll ask the two women, how can women help each other succeed? I mean, we talked about the pipeline is getting more full now. We've seen the backlash against Sheryl's book, the recent article on Queen Bee Syndrome. But it seems to me that women do a lot to help each other as well. And so I just wonder if you have some thoughts on women's roles in sponsoring other women.
Yeah, I would say to not be afraid to sponsor other women, because I can tell you the number of times that I've been in conversations with senior female leaders about sponsoring other female leaders or advocating for other female leaders. And the concern is always, well, gee, you know, I'm going to be perceived as somehow favoring women. And the question I often ask them is, if we were two men having this conversation, do you think the man would be saying, well, gee, I'm really concerned that I'm going to be perceived as being favorable towards men? So I think all of the things we've said about the commitment to excellence, working hard, really having domain expertise that is recognized and adds value for the business, all of those things I call table stakes. The differentiators are really us as women being willing to let go of some of the assumptions and the paradigms we have about using our power and using it effectively. One of the things that I think a lot about at this stage of my life and this stage of my career is, how do you, certainly for my firm, access the genius that exists within people? That's what I think about, is I have a fundamental belief that genius exists, and I want to be the person that helps unlock that genius in you. And I think to help women understand that they have genius inherent in them is a lot of what Sheryl is talking about, that so much of the limitation starts with us ourselves and the limitations we place on ourselves. And then we then internalize that limitation and then feel hesitant to lean forward. And I'm hoping that myself and by doing this kind of discussion and creating a forum where we can talk openly about it, it starts to create a dialogue that hopefully will start to make some shifts.
I couldn't agree with you more about all of the things that you said so eloquently about, you know, opening the genie bottle, if you like, and discovering what's inside. That's so important. But the dialogue is critical, and the nice thing now is, and Cheryl's helped it actually, even with the criticism, actually
yes.
probably because of the criticism,
mm-hmm. yes.
the dialogue has become more open. And, you know, I think that sometimes women have tried to hide the fact they're female, and I've always found that to be quite ridiculous. You are what you are, and that's great, and leverage that. And, you know, now the conversation is more open, you know. It's really a good thing. And I think that it will help women to be more confident in terms of really expressing and also being able to follow the path that you want to follow. And, you know, really having the confidence to do that. From my perspective, I found in operating roles, being able to sponsor individuals was something that I really enjoyed, male or female. Mm-hmm. And it was relatively easy to do compared to now in an entrepreneurial world. Where, you know, as a venture capital, I'm looking at sponsoring women in different ways, investing in women, and with Mayfield and also with Illuminate Ventures, which we talked about. And so, you know, in recent times, I've been interested in really trying to encourage more women to step forward in the entrepreneurial world, where we've seen huge success, and there are increasing numbers of women coming into startup companies, mm-hmm. but often, most often, it's not as a leader, it's as part of the support team. And in many instances, you know, you'd love to see more women step up. We've seen some successes, and it would be great to see more. And so that's a real interest of mine.
Mm-hmm. And Shelley, I know it's dangerous for Randy and I to weigh into the Sheryl Sandberg book, but I've been, you know, read a little bit about it, and I've talked to my wife quite a bit about it, but I think we should make a couple of comments, at least observations. And it is my observation over the last 30 years that you know, men, at least in the world that I'm in, the corporate world, will look at Mount Everest and say, I can climb Mount Everest, even though there's not a chance they can do it.
Right.
And a lot of times mm-hmm. women won't say that. They'll just work hard and expect to be rewarded for just the hard work. And so regardless of what you think about her book, this concept of leaning in until you decide what you want to do is a really good mm-hmm. concept. Yeah. And I say that as a man. I don't know what I'm talking about. I understand that. But it is my observation as a corporate leader that there is something there about what she's saying to lean into your career. You make the decision when you want to lean back. But that, I think that's a very powerful notion. I don't know if you see. I hate to
No, that's okay. I think it's the only counterpoint I would make is that you got to make certain you're leaning into an organization that wants to be leaned on.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And I think that's a reality.
Absolutely.
So there's the other side of the coin, yeah. And I think you mentioned it earlier. There's got to be advocates for a change.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Because what I don't want to do is incite several thousand women at Cisco to change their relationship with their boss and their boss's boss, only discover that we don't have the infrastructure to support it and we bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've got to do this together. And I think, again, I'm not casting aspersions or praise on the book, other than it has created a different dialogue, and I think we should seize the moment and run with it.
Right.
Yeah. Agreed. No, I agree. I think I always think of revolution as evolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
I think we think that there has been a massive revolution, and I think if history always tells us, if you look back, there has been quiet seeds of change being planted over time. And what I am very thoughtful about is there's this. The book has created space for the dialogue
mm-hmm.
because I think there's always been a desire to have the dialogue. But what she has done so, I think, powerfully is given permission for that dialogue to occur, whether you agree with her,
mm-hmm.
whether you don't agree, whether you believe that because she's one of the most powerful and most financially successful women in the world, that creates a different set of dynamics. Whatever your beliefs are about who she is, the fact that she has written a book that has created space and given permission for us to be having this dialogue, for me, is, as my kids would say, is all good.
Yeah, and I think that there are people sort of all over the U.S. and increasingly around the world having this dialogue in different ways. And it's not just about, you know, everybody being the CEO of a major
right.
company. It's really realizing your potential and being happy and fulfilled and doing what you want to do. And I think that this conversation, I hope, will be adapted to your own particular circumstance so you can realize your path and, you know, be happy in what you do, but really go for it and, you know, do what you can to achieve that success, whatever it may be, but have the confidence to, you know, learn from some of the stories that other people have and really go out and forge your path. But forge it, you know? Try.
Okay, one more question for me, and then we'll turn to audience questions. And I want to just end by foregrounding the issue of gender and asking how does gender matter in the sponsorship process? Do women face different barriers to finding a sponsor than men? Is sponsorship equally important for women as it is for men, or more important? How do you think gender matters in establishing that relationship?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but I know that we're on a path at my company and we're not done yet. And so we have more men in senior leadership positions. So I think women need to look to some of those men for sponsorships. So I think we're not fulfilled yet. So I think it depends on the dynamics and the trust you can build. I think there are women to women sponsorships that if they can build deep trust with each other, then that works. But I think it is up to a lot of the men in these senior positions to really make this happen over the next decade.
Well, from my perspective, I think sponsorship's around talent. It isn't a gender conversation for me, and it hasn't been a racial conversation. I've sponsored Hispanic males, Hispanic females, Indian females. It's around talented people getting the right opportunities inside of the enterprise. And I think it's just being aware when you have those moments that Mark was alluding to earlier, where you can make a stand and say, okay, I've got the right person for this job, and it's going to look like an odd candidate, but I guarantee this is going to work. So I don't want to genderize, that's probably not even a word, the dialogue for us, because that's not really what it is. I think sponsorship has a role in enterprise for everybody. Mm-hmm.
So I would agree with you. I think that it is accurate to say that it is about talent, because ultimately that's what really creates value for the organizations. But I also think that you can't ignore the fact that gender does play a role. And where those sponsorships work and work well is when you equip the individuals to be able to have those authentic conversations, to be able to give feedback all of the years that I've been in the business. Some of the most challenging things has been coaching leaders around giving tough feedback, either cross-gender, cross-race, cross whatever demographic you pick. It's just inherent. It's just the inherent uncertainty about doing that. So I think it is absolutely correct that it's about talent, but you also have to recognize that there are certain dynamics that will be at play. And if you're serious as an organization about advocating for women, you have to recognize that gender does play a role. You're not driven by gender, so you're not using gender to make the decision, but you've got to accept that those cross-gender dynamics at times are at play, and how do you best equip individuals to have those authentic conversations around the quality of your performance, ways that I can certainly advocate for you, and I can do that in a way that allows you to be successful, but recognizing that gender and racial dynamics do play a role, and just not allowing it to be a barrier, but honoring that exists.
You know, I agree with you, and I all that's been said. I've sponsored men and women, many talented people, but I think the reason we're here is that we do believe that there is a gender issue, and I think it's, you know, we're not talking about sponsoring inadequate people. We're talking about sponsoring great talent and getting the best out of this talent. And I just think sometimes, not always with women, you just need to help them get the ball rolling. And once it's rolling, it's rolling. It's really rolling, you know, and you see women really step up, and that's very encouraging. Now, I sit on a bunch of boards, and I just see, you know, in companies, and I also see at the board level, just the benefit of diversity. So, you know, I think it is worth this little bit of effort from us both, two-way. And I don't think sponsorship stops as you're moving up through the ranks either. I mean, we most often talk about sponsorship, you know, in a hierarchical way as you're moving up through the ranks. But, you know, I'm looking at sponsors now as I'm looking at joining a couple of boards. And, you know, I've been out today talking actually to one woman actually who's on a couple of boards. And what I really sort of welcomed was this very frank conversation. Well, what do you want? What don't you want? You know, and, you know, then I can help you. And so, you know, that feedback was really helpful. And so, you know, I think reaching out to men and women is really important. Sometimes it is a little harder with men. I was reading one of the articles in preparation for this panel about women are reluctant to talk to men in case it's misinterpreted, blah, 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 blah. But I think in most instances that's not the case. I think that if you reach out to very senior, good sort of guys like the ones we have here, you know, they if there's a shot of them sponsoring you and you have a, I think you have a direction. I think you need to know, have a good sense of what you're capable of and what you want. Then I think it's amazing how people will help you. And I said at the beginning, I'll say it now, I've been really, really, really lucky in terms of the people that have helped me along the way.
Janice, could I just follow up? Have you experienced that women are more reluctant to seek out a sponsor? I mean, you were sort of talking about we need to not be coy and just speak up, and I wonder if that makes women less likely maybe to seek out a sponsor, and if sponsorships mostly happen naturally, what can people who are leaders and organizations do to help get women past that barrier, if it is a barrier?
Well, I'm a person who loves stories, and I think the more we hear about stories and examples, the better. And you've talked about them, and if there's any opportunities in your company to talk about these examples, I think those are always great. But I think in terms of the company culture, just really developing a sense of openness, and it seems to me that that's what you're doing here, which is great. And I would just think, the worst that can happen is people can say no. Mm-hmm. Then try somebody else. Just don't let it get to you. You know, keep trying. And those are the people that succeed because, feel good about yourself. Self-esteem is so important. And you know what you can do. You know you wouldn't be looking for a sponsor if you didn't have that urge to go out and perform and to contribute. So, if someone can't sponsor you for whatever reason, try somebody else. And, I think in this world today, it's a busy, competitive world. You have to keep trying. But that's what I would encourage you to do.
I think the safe path, too, is, we've talked a lot about trust. Mm-hmm. That's really the only thing that matters here.
Right.
And the safe path is to begin some kind of mentorship dialogue and have a cup of coffee and just talk about things and share a little bit of wisdom. And that might lead to sponsorship because that sponsor wants to make sure you're really good. Mm-hmm. They're not going to put their political capital
right.
in unless you're really
right.
good. And so they do have to get to know you. So start with this mentorship dialogue, maybe even just a cup of coffee. Build a trusting relationship with that individual, then make the ask down the road.
I think you'd also be surprised when you ask. The openness and the willingness is there to do it. It is rare that I have not been approached by female leaders and males as well about sponsorship where I have not, particularly, as we said, those are typically the people who have that internal drive already, where I have not extended myself to actively sponsor individuals. And if I'm not the appropriate person, because again, remember, we're talking about the ability to advocate for you and to really consistent with a particular direction you want to take, potentially in your professional career, the ability to navigate that for you, I've also opened doors to others for them, because that's a form of sponsorship as well. It isn't just that I have access to a specific domain of expertise that I can give you access to, but I may have access to others who could open even further doors for you. So that's the other way to think about sponsorship as well.
So we have some questions from the audience, and what I'll do is read the question and hopefully get it correct, and we can just go down the row and answer as you see fit. So the first question from the audience is, how does a sponsor balance the perception that preferential treatment is being given unfairly rather than a healthy sponsorship?
I would have started that in this time.
Why'd you do that?
Anyone who wants.
I think, in terms of this whole issue of preferential treatment, I think we've really addressed that somewhat in that, it is a two-way street here. We are sponsoring people who we believe in, and we expect those people to perform. And I think those people who are sponsored generally, as we've addressed here, feel a responsibility to really step it up and to really work hard and to perform and be successful. So, I think you can always point to situations like that, but I think in most situations, the people that are sponsored or who are put on a fast track in a company, it's for reasons of talent and performance most often.
I would agree, and I also think that you can't allow that, either the reality or the perception of preferential treatment prevent you from actually doing that? Because if that were the case, you would never lean forward and you would never advocate for someone. But I think if underneath that is this individual has a track record of performance in the organization, that goes a long way to dispelling a lot of those thoughts about this individual's getting preferential treatment.
I would agree.
And hey, let's get real here. I mean, I'm going through a process right now and looking at a man and a woman for a very important leadership position in the firm today. And if it's even, I'm actually going to pick the woman because we're not where we need to be yet to be this exceptional organization. So if that's preferential treatment, I'm sorry. And sometimes men are upset about that decision that you make, but you need to make sure that's a high-talent woman because the worst thing you can do is put an average woman in that position, then they fail, and then all the men say, see what I told you. So if it's even, in many situations, put this high-talent woman in there, stretch her, make her be great, support her. That's the only way you'll make change. So as a sponsor, courage is a really important asset. You must be courageous in making some of these decisions.
And I would follow up on that by saying, actually, as a woman, I found in my career, if you're good, it's an advantage. If you're average, that's when it's a disadvantage. So be good at something.
Okay, I'm going to combine the next two questions together because I think it'll allow us to get to more questions. And the first one is, it's probably important for a junior employee to get a sponsor who has a lot of experience. How do they get access to someone at your level? And the second part, does the sponsor have to come from the same organization?
Very interesting on different organizations. I can think about over my career, we've had people outside of my organization who have helped me and sponsored me, including clients. We're in professional services, and so clients that I became very close to, they helped me in my career. And it's pretty special when that happens that way. But as a young person, it's all about trust. And so get to know that executive secretary, right? Get to know them very well. Then you have access to them and get, you know, figure out what their likes and dislikes are. Where do they like to have coffee? Where do they work out? Go get to know them that way, right?
Basically.
There's a lot of different ways to do that, but I think it's important.
I think I would make the comment that you got to be careful how far you shoot up when you look for a spot. I can't tell you how many times, you know, a third-year person will show up in my office and say, will you mentor me? That is not a useful exercise. There's just too many layers. I mean, I'm not going to give good guidance to somebody that early in their career, quite honestly. Now, I'll meet with them a couple of times a year, but I shouldn't mentor a sponsor. That really looks like preferential treatment if somebody on high, deep, goes down eight levels to try to promote somebody's career. So I think you have to be thoughtful about who you select and how many layers there are between you and that individual, because I actually couldn't influence somebody getting from an individual contributor to a manager at Cisco if I wanted to. I'm much more useful getting you from a director to a VP or a VP to an SVP. So I think you should be thoughtful when you do that work. And I also think there shouldn't be an organizational boundary to this. I mentor and coach a lot of people in different functional organizations who don't report to me that's useful for them and useful for me, quite honestly.
Yeah. The only thing I would add to your point, because it triggered something in me, is a mentoring or sponsorship relationship never takes the place of the relationship between an individual and his or her supervisor. And that's a real caution that as a sponsor or an advocate that you've got to be very thoughtful about it. That's why I think this idea of an open, trusting relationship, and any of the individuals that I sponsor or have sponsored or where I've been sponsored, it always has been with the full openness and awareness of whoever was in my supervisory was in a supervisory role of my position. That is so critical not to do that, because we haven't talked about when sponsorship or when advocacy goes what I call the flat side or the dark side, and it is when the individual actually builds that deep bonding, trusting relationship with the sponsor at the expense of building the relationship with the supervisor, or when there is conflict with the supervisor and the attempt to have the sponsor relationship replace the supervisor. So that's probably one of the downsides of sponsorship and advocacy.
I have nothing to add, really.
Okay, so the next question from the audience, it's a two-part question. There is a mixed message. Is a sponsor going to find you, or do you have to find one yourself? And then second, is being sponsor basically required for elevation? Isn't it just politics, building coalitions?
The answer to the first one is yes. You both have to be engaged. I mean, it's give and take for a good sponsorship a situation. There's politics in every organization, right? From small to large, there's politics. But sponsorship has to be genuine. You know, when I've been sponsored, it's always been genuine. It's been based on a relationship I built. So I don't think, you know, when I look at people that have risen in my organization, it's been through genuine connection, and what goes around comes around. If I do something good for you, you don't owe me anything. If I do something good for you, you don't owe me anything. You do that over your career inside your organization, it's amazing the great things that happen to you and all those around you.
Well, so I'm torn on the subject a little bit. I don't think sponsorship is politics at all, and I think creating some I've always had the view of a corporation the size of Cisco. Let's say that. I mean, we have over 70,000 employees. I would like not to make advocacy, mentorship, and sponsorship an act of a whim or just happen to connect. So I would love for us to be able. We've done a great job, as I said earlier, automating and creating a lot of opportunities for mentorships. Making that move to the next level to sponsorship, you know, our focus has been on high potentials. And at the executive levels, high potential directors and VPs who we can see getting one or two more levels in the business, we try to connect them. So we'll broker with each other. You know, I'll take this one, you can take that one, but I want to give this person a different view. So we're trying to add a little more formality, I think, to this as we move forward, because I think it's going to be important to the business. That doesn't stop somebody from, you know, looking for their own sponsor or advocate inside of the organization. But again, I think, you know, to the points made earlier, you got to be cautious that you don't look like you're over promoting yourself, because then it does cast a pallor over the whole thing, unfortunately.
No, I think that it is a two-way thing. The only thing I would add, I mean, you've talked about your organizations, and obviously, Randy, you've done some great things in Cisco, and you're institutionalizing this, and I think it will really help you, you know, it is helping you, obviously, through the performance of the company, building this great pool of talent and then, you know, finding them and developing them and so on. It's a little different in smaller companies. And it's interesting, actually, before I came to this meeting, I was talking to someone about this whole thing who'd recently promoted a couple of women, actually. And he is in a small company, but he's a seasoned manager. But in many small companies, the people who are running the companies are not seasoned managers, so maybe don't think like you. And that's one of the challenges in the Valley, actually. As you grow companies, you know, a lot of the people leading some of these high-growth companies have not managed anything before. So I think at that point, it is important that it does become, you know, something that you do if you're looking for a sponsor. I think you need to have to push forward a little bit yourself, because I don't think many of these managers will necessarily have the time or necessarily have the training, if you like, or the experience to necessarily seek out people to sponsor. So I would be proactive.
Okay, the next question is, the business case has been written and rewritten time and time again. How do we move beyond the conversation of the business case to a conversation actionable, accountable leadership?
Yeah, I think that the leaders of all these organizations just have to take action on their own. And so as a member of the board of directors of Deloitte, we look at this every month. We look at statistics and the number of women leaders as we promote people to partnership each year. We look at all the data. But I think it's actually about culture. And whether you're a small organization or a big organization, you can collectively decide whether you're going to have a culture of inclusion and engagement and diverse leadership or not. And some will choose not to do that. I think, you know, for us in professional services, you must have that because you must look like the face of your client. And many of our clients, boardroom, C-suite, that's what they look like. And if we don't look that way, we will not be exceptional.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, again, I think for us the problem's a little bit different in that, you know, if you look at where we have opportunities to, you know, to deal with gender in the business, you know, our CIO is a female, our CMO is a female, our CTO is a female, our CHRO is a female. Where the fundamental problem has been and continues to be at Cisco's in sales and engineering. And that's in organizations where we have to grow our own. So we're going to have to move farther down the talent chain to find people much earlier. You laugh. I mean, girls in high school, quite honestly, who we can incent through scholarship to get into a STEM program someplace so I can then give internships to and then hire into the business. This is a much more difficult problem for us to solve. But again, I think you have to drive accountability, and I think the noise has to stay consistent, and corporations have to be held accountable that they know that there's an initiative at the executive level, that some executive is responsible for moving the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, we share a similar concern as you do, because our business is around oncology research. So we discover, develop, and commercialize cancer drugs. And therefore, most of the value in our business is driven by science, to a certain extent, science and engineering, because engineering is about the formulation of how those products actually make it to market. And we, like you and many other companies, that's what we're doing. It isn't fishing in the same pool of experienced talent and hoping that you can lure people away from other organizations. It really is, if we're serious about it, we make a very early investment, which is what we're doing right now. As small as we are as a company, we have high schools that we are sponsoring, and that is another way that I am sponsoring, not women in our organization for advocates, but actually sponsoring a group of high school, female high school students in San Francisco that actually are going to be working in our business for 6 to 9 months. And it really is giving them exposure to what does it mean to work in a lab? How does a drug get developed? What's exciting about being part of saving some person's life? 9 times out of 10, most of the individuals that we connect with in high school have had some personal experience or some tangential experience of an individual who has dealt with some life-threatening disease. So there's the ability to connect with them emotionally about the possibility of either transforming or changing or saving some person's life. And we take it as seriously as you do. It's not at all. The point that you made is incredibly relevant, because the science, technology, engineering, and math fields are increasingly very, very sparse with respect to female talent, mm-hmm. and increasingly in the U.S. because of the underfunding of that type of education in the public school system, we now have, I certainly believe, a national crisis mm-hmm. with respect to our ability to be competitive as a country and competitive as employers. And increasingly, we are having to source talent from other countries who are minting PhDs in large numbers. Mm-hmm. So longer term, it's our competitiveness as a country that I'm concerned about, not just about our competitiveness as an employer. That's today's problem. You know, the problem that I'm worried about is 10 to 15 years from now.
You know, I totally agree with what you said, Kay, and you, Randy, about reaching out to the high school level, having a 16-year-old daughter. I see that, and it really is so important, because there's a little sort of lull at that age, I think, in terms of self-esteem and not really knowing what they want to do. And this isn't going to solve the problem, but in a couple of weeks, I'm taking a bunch of high school girls I know up to the city to a startup I'm invested in, because they use all these shopping apps all the time. Yes. And I want them to know how they're, yes. I want them to know how they're put together and to just get a sense of it, you know. But that's just a little thing to do. But you do see that, and I think that's really important, and to expose them, because they're intimidated by what they don't know as opposed to what they do know. On the other hand, when I look at the entrepreneurial world, and I'm really sort of talking about this area here somewhat, maybe in other parts of the world to a degree, I am seeing more women coming into the entrepreneurial world, the startup land. As I said, you know, I am seeing many of them decide not to lead but to be part of the team, and that tends to be what women do, and you'd like to see more leaders. But I do think that there is, you know, a lot more energy from women moving into startups right now, and mm-hmm. I think that's good. And I think we as the venture community need to continue to encourage that, because, you know, that will spread out into other things. Interestingly, actually, when I look at particularly some of the enterprise companies, I did a little look before I came here, many of the women who are in leadership positions come from somewhere else. You know, it reinforces your point. So, you know, this is another conversation, mm-hmm. but we do need to reach down and to bring these young women up, because the workforce needs them.
Mm-hmm. Sir, excellent points. So the next question is, most of the women I have heard speak from a leadership position have acknowledged how lucky they have been to be sponsored. What do those of us who work for companies that don't want us to lean on do? So if you're working for a company that doesn't necessarily want you to be seeking out sponsors, what advice would you have for people in that position?
Miranda, that was your point you were making earlier. Yeah. If you lean in too hard and yeah. you're in a culture where they don't want that, it could create a big problem. And you know what? If you desire that, you might be at the wrong company, mm-hmm. right? I mean, maybe if you want to move up and you want a culture that will allow you to do that, maybe you're at the wrong company.
I hate to admit this, but I've had this conversation with women at Cisco where their career moves to a point where they end up with a supervisor, for lack of a better term, who just doesn't make that emotional connection with them. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, I don't think he has any vested interest in my career development. I can't help it. And I always tell them, you can look around in the enterprise and find a different boss. You just got to decide that you're at a point in your career where you've hit a tipping point. You got to move on. And both happens, quite honestly. And I think you have to vote to some degree with your feet. If you're just not in the right environment, you have to change the environment. And I know that's horrible, but it's just reality. I mean, there's a pace of change here that everybody's going through, and there's going to be laggards in every one of these things. Cisco is not going to be one of them, I can guarantee you that, but I can't speak for the industry as a whole.
I think that's why the earlier question about sponsorship beyond just your organization is so important, because that's how you really give yourself optionality. And you get to see different sides. You get to see different different opportunities as opposed to just looking narrowly down into your organization. Interestingly enough, I have had an opportunity where a relationship I had, a sponsor that I had outside of one of my companies, actually advocated for me inside of my own company with a senior leadership team. And so my only point is, I think there is benefit to having those sponsoring relationships beyond just within the company that you're in, because if, as Randy said, you find yourself in a circumstance where you are having to vote with your feet as opposed to voting with your time, then it's certainly you're not stranded, shall we say. You at least believe you have some options.
Yeah, and this conversation is primarily about sponsorship, but in that sort of situation, this is where some mentorship might come in, where you reach out a little bit to get some advice as to which path you should take, and then move to somewhere where you can get some active sponsorship.
Janice, how does it work differently for people that are more entrepreneurs as opposed to being in a firm in terms of trying to get sponsors?
Well, it's interesting, actually. One thing that I do think is encouraging, if you look at sort of the younger sort of demographic today, sort of early 20s, moving to 30s, I think if you look in the companies that these people have created, there's a huge amount of diversity and, you know, just a huge amount of energy. And so I think that's really important. And I think in those types of situations, it's often the women, honestly, who may hold themselves back a little bit. I think the opportunities are there. But I think that it may be there that in some of those instances, because of the size and the nature of the company, the sponsorship might come from the venture industry. But I think, you know, there's a lot of more mentorship going on there, where you're actually being mentored by people who have done similar things or worked in different companies. So that's why I think the mentorship role becomes relatively more important.
Thank you. Okay, last question from the audience. How does one push from below in an organization that has exclusively male executives to get those male executives to embrace sponsorship of women into higher leadership roles, especially if the organization is in survival mode given the tough economic times?
Some man in that leadership position is going to see the light one day, and all men see it at some point in their career. They realize, you know, leadership is actually getting people to do something because they want to do it, not because you're telling them to do it. That's management. And true leadership inside companies, the light comes on at different times, and so keep looking for that man that where the light has come on and connect with him. But there's plenty of organizations where that man has a wife, that man has a daughter. Mike Cook in 1993 said his daughter doesn't have opportunities. He said, I'm going to do something about this at Deloitte in 1993. There's a guy there somewhere that sees the light.
Well, I would also say that you should look to the broader community. When I think back on Cisco years ago, I mean, you know, we went to HP to learn corporate social responsibility. We were growing so fast, and Morgan said, you know, we're going to pause and we're going to figure out how we're going to do this right. And we went up and visited HP, who, because of, you know, who they were, was really good at it, and they trained us. I've done several events where I've gone out and talked to entrepreneurs about, you know, starting a foundation before they go public. Because it's great for the community. It's great for them. It creates lots of opportunities for wealth creation in the Valley and for charitable giving in the Valley. And it's something that we have done. We started our own foundation by spinning in. When we bought a company, we had to divest of something, and we used that funds to start the foundation. So we tell stories. So I would, you know, you can use the broader executive community to influence the executives in a business, especially if they're businesses where there's a supplier relationship. I recruit board members for not-for-profits in the Bay Area, and I use my supply base to hunt from. There's a lot of talent out there, and mm-hmm. they're not going to not take my call. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a bigger environment that we can actually bring to solve some of these problems and to move people to a different direction.
Yeah, this is a very good point, actually, because no company is an island, right? You're
exactly.
all working with other people. There's an ecosystem. So look to the broader ecosystem. I think that's a very good point, Randy.
And I also think the fact that the question referenced that the company is in crisis mode, I think there's an opportunity to think about or to really position yourself as being part of the solution. So it isn't that you're looking for sponsorship because you want to be sponsored, but because you have something of value to add that could actually help the company.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it is the rare executive that doesn't respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the, I hate to say angle, but I think that that would be an appropriate way to really think about what's the problem that the company is trying to solve, and is there a way that I have some insight or I can offer something that can be part of the solution, and use that as the way, as your way into that executive team.
So we have one more question that just came up. This person writes, what about diversity in terms of age or different experience? So we've been talking a lot about gender. Can we broaden the conversation a bit to other kinds of diversity?
So as a sponsor looking for someone that's has more experience, an old guy like me, is that what you mean? You know, that's probably what they mean. You want a sponsor that can actually get things done in the organization, right? So it depends where you are. I think Randy said you don't want to go, you know, six or seven clicks up, but you want someone that could get something done for you as you advance your career. So it's not really age. It's capital that they have in the organization to get things done.
Well, if the question's around the broader diversity question, that's a very good question. And there's actually an event at Stanford coming up around the longevity in the workplace and the fact that, you know, we have multiple generations. We just had a guy retire at Cisco, was 85 years old. He was
really?
My oldest, 85. He was my oldest employee.
Brilliant.
He fought the Nazis during World War II. He was that old. I was stunned when I found out his age. Well, so I've got people working into their 70s. We got employees, you know, 22 and 23 years old.
Yeah.
So that is putting a lot of pressure on the business and on the leadership team in the business for us to transform to deal with this divergence in the workforce and what's important to them in the workday. And, you know, where flexibility is important for some groups and the kids love the collaboration environments, I've had people quit because they took their cubicles away. You know, we hotel. I mean, it's just part of our practices. So that's a whole – there's a huge body of work going on right now around the aging of the workforce and the fact that you're dealing with so many generations now because the work life's extended so long.
I mean, I echo everything that you say. I've gone from a well-established, old-line company where tenure was measured in decades to, for all intents and purposes, a startup company where the demographics of the workforce is not quite a start. But the issues are exactly the same because there are other factors that are influencing what's happening in the workforce. It isn't just your personal preference to work until you're 85. There are now some economic factors that are forcing people, whether it's Social Security, whether it's been the decline in the performance of 401ks, there are a number of factors that actually are having significant impacts on the workforce. So we don't have a choice as employers but to deal with that. You don't have the luxury anymore of saying that I have mandatory retirement and people must leave at 62. It just isn't that way, and you have then folks that are coming into the workforce on the other end from, our children, for all intents and purposes, who come to the workforce. I was telling someone earlier today that one of the lessons that this younger generation has taught me is work is not something that you do, is not a place that you go, is something you do, and therefore it can be done anywhere, at any time, and in any fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to get yourself comfortable with that as a construct and really be clear about what does productivity and outcome and value mean. And that means, that doesn't mean one single thing. That means a range of different things. And that's something that from a leadership perspective, we've really been trying to get our leaders to embrace. And I was saying earlier that we have obviously a lab of scientists, and when they get, there's a group of them, when they get really stuck on a problem, I look through the window and they have their surfboards and they're going to surf. And it's like, you know, midday. And, you know, I come from the Northeast originally, and I'm just thinking, like, this is the most bizarre thing. But these are the same guys who have come up with innovative, life-saving therapies. And if they have to be in the office from 7 at night to 7 the next morning to get it done, that's their commitment. So all of that is putting, this whole idea of diversity is really putting significant challenges on us. And, you know, folks like me who've been doing this for 35 plus years, you have to constantly keep being abreast of what's happening. And diversity doesn't mean what it meant a decade ago, 20 years ago. So this idea of old, I'm north of 50. I don't consider myself old. So the very idea that you use that language and that language shapes your mindset is something we've got to get ourselves out of. Because what I really want to understand is what I said earlier. I want to be accountable for unleashing the genius that exists within the people in our workforce. That's going to happen very, very fundamentally different ways because people are different.
Oh, I totally agree. It's fascinating to me, the whole sort of aging sort of situation. And, of course, now, as you said, people not only have to work longer in many instances, many want to. Mm-hmm. And because of technology, we can work longer and have some flexibility in life, and I think that's great. But the whole phenomenon of how you actually bring young people, particularly to work for bigger companies, I think, you know, you can't say to them, come in, that's your cube over there. I mean, that's not going to attract anybody. Actually, I went through a company, I won't say it, wasn't yours, just recently, and it there were sort of rows and rows and rows of cubes, and it was just one color, and I thought, and that, you know, because I've been spending, I worked in that environment, but I've been spending recent years in a startup environment where it's just so different, you know, and even classrooms in school now have couches and kids on themselves. You know, it's all different, and I think to get the most out of people, you have to adapt, whether they're young, whether they're old, whether they're women, whether they're men. And, you know, it gets back to what you're trying to do, and I think your own sort of values, which is really important, how you get the most out of this very sort of interesting workforce. But I think diversity actually brings out the best in everyone when you get it working. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we better wrap it up on that very positive note. This has been a fabulous panel. Thank you all for your time, and thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you all enjoyed this evening's program, again brought to you by the Commonwealth Club of Silicon Valley and Deloitte. Again, we would like to send a personal thank you, and everybody here thanks you all. Mark Edmonds, Randy Pond, Janice Roberts, Kay Foster Cheek, and Dr. Shelley Carell. Thank you.
Thank you. Very nice to meet you.